of psychoanalysis. In your medical instruction, you have been accustomed to visual demonstration. You see the anatomical specimen, the precipitate in the chemical reaction, the contraction of the muscle as the result of the stimulation of its nerves. Later, the patient is presented to your senses, the symptoms of his malady, the products of the pathological processes, in many cases even the cause of the disease, is shown in isolated state. In the surgical department, you are made to witness the steps by which one brings relief to the patient and are permitted to attempt to practice them. Even in psychiatry, the demonstration affords you, by the patient's changed facial play, his manner of speech and his behaviour, a wealth of observations which leave far-reaching impressions. Thus, the medical teacher preponderantly plays the role of a guide and instructor who accompanies you through a museum in which you contract an immediate relationship to the exhibits, and in which you believe yourself to have been convinced, through your own observation, of the existence of the new things you see. Unfortunately, everything is different in psychoanalysis. In psychoanalysis, nothing occurs but the interchange of words between the patient and the physician. The patient talks, tells of his past experiences and present impressions, complains, confesses his wishes and emotions. The physician listens, tries to direct the thought processes of the patient, reminds him of things, forces his attention into certain channels, gives him explanations, and observes the reactions of understanding or denial which he calls forth in the patient. The uneducated relatives of our patients, persons who are impressed only by the visible and tangible, preferably by such procedure as one sees in the moving picture theatres, never miss an opportunity of voicing their scepticism as to how one can do anything for the malady through mere talk. Such thinking, of course, is as short-sighted as it is inconsistent, for these are the very persons who know with such certainty that the patients merely imagine their symptoms.
Words were originally magic,
and the word retains much of its old magical power even today. With words, one man can make another blessed or drive him to despair. By words, the teacher transfers his knowledge to the pupil. By words, the speaker sweeps his audience with him and determines its judgments and decisions. Words call forth effects, and are the universal means of influencing human beings. Therefore, let us not underestimate the use of words in psychotherapy, and let us be satisfied if we may be auditors of the words which are exchanged between the analyst and his patient. But even that is impossible. The conversation of which the psychoanalytic treatment consists brooks no auditor. It cannot be demonstrated. One can, of course, present a neurasthenic or hysteric to the students in a psychiatric lecture. He tells of his complaints and symptoms, but of nothing else. The communications which are necessary for the analysis are made only under the conditions of a special affective relationship to the physician. The patient would become dumb as soon as he became aware of a single impartial witness. For these communications concern the most intimate part of his psychic life. Everything which has a socially independent person he must conceal from others. These communications deal with everything which, as a harmonious personality, he will not admit even to himself. You cannot, therefore, listen in on a psychoanalytic treatment. You can only hear of it. You will get to know psychoanalysis in the strictest sense of the word, only by hearsay. Such instruction, even at second hand, will place you in quite an unusual position for forming a judgment, for it is obvious that everything depends on the faith you are able to put in the instructor. Imagine that you are not attending a psychiatric but an historical lecture, and that the lecturer is telling you about the life and martial deeds of Alexander the Great.